Okay, so let's get started. So okay. I know, obviously, that you are a musician and you love music and you have this amazing podcast that I love, Song Exploder. But I have no idea if movies have been a big part of your life. What role have they played in your life?
They have been a huge part of my life. I live in Los Angeles, and the reason why I moved here is in order to score films.
Really?
That was the reason why I came out here. Yeah, I was playing music, you know, since, well, I'd been playing music really my whole life. I was in bands in high school and in college, and by the time I finished college and shortly thereafter, I felt like I wanted to, I really wanted to have that be my life, and specifically I wanted to score films too. I knew how to play in a band, but I didn't know how to score films, and but I figured I could do my music, make my records and everything from anywhere, and so eventually I moved to LA in order to pursue that.
Who were the composers that you admired?
Danny Elfman was a huge one for me.
Do you remember what the first movie you saw with him that kind of blew you away?
I think the 1989, the first Batman that Tim Burton did, the theme from that, I used to try and learn how to play that on the piano. I loved that music. I loved that melody.
You can't really think of Tim Burton's movies without his scores. Like, they're so synonymous.
It's true. I mean, I feel like so much of being a good composer, being a successful composer, maybe is, you know, equal parts talent and having a great partner as a director.
So true. I mean, you think about like John Williams and what he's done with Spielberg, and they're synonymous as well. And yeah, it's a really good point. I never thought of how important that relationship is.
Yeah, I had Ludwig Göransson on Song Exploder recently, and he, you know, he's being really deservedly praised for his work on Black Panther. And that's a relationship that's now three movies deep with the director Ryan Coogler. And on the podcast, he told the story of how they met, you know, when they were both students at USC. And it takes that, you know, there's some formative moment when these two people meet, and then these incredible relationships can come out of it.
Yeah, those bonds are made. Yeah. It's incredible.
So it feels kind of, there's a little bit of chance to the whole thing, because you can be a great composer, I think, and if you don't have that kind of relationship or a partner with a director who's also successful on their side, you might never get to that level.
Yeah, no kidding. So much has to align to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to take you back in time for a minute by asking you to talk about the first time that you saw You Can Count on Me. I'd love for you to close your eyes and for 10 seconds just think about how old you were, where you were, all of the kind of circumstances that surrounded that first time that you saw the movie, and then I'll chime back in.
Okay. It actually ties right back into what we were just talking about. It was around the same time that I was making these decisions about what I was going to do with my life and where. It was in the summer, late summer of 2001. I was at home in the house that I grew up in Massachusetts, Peabody, Massachusetts. It was a Friday, and I think I was sick. And I was at home. I'd put on the movie in the afternoon. I'd rented it on VHS, and it was close to a time when I was about to move to New York. I was trying to figure out where I was going to go to try and have this career as a film composer, maybe, you know, and continue my life as a musician.
Had you graduated college already?
Yeah, I had graduated college, and I'd spent the summer after college on tour. I'd gone all over the country for about 5 weeks, and I had traveled to Sweden earlier in that summer, and just had been kind of really enjoying that time and trying to figure it out. But it was, I think my family was a little bit concerned about my direction, and I moved back home sort of temporarily and got a job in Massachusetts and was working there and living in my parents' place.
Mm.
My sister was also living there at the time. My dad was out of town. He had moved to Nebraska for work there. So it was my mom, me, and my sister.
And is your sister older or younger?
My sister's older.
How much older?
She's 5 years older than me.
Oh, wow. My brother's the same. You're 5 years
really?
Older than me. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you and your brother very close?
Very close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The the age difference between my sister and me is small enough that we could enjoy a lot of things together, and big enough that we had a relationship. She kind of, in some ways was like a third parent for me.
Yeah.
She was old enough that she taught me a lot of stuff. We had kind of a very clearly defined big sister, younger brother kind of dynamic because of that age difference. She's the person who taught me how to read. She introduced me to so many things, so many of the things in my life now that I still love. She was the person who brought those to me at first. And especially once she left for college and I was in high school, we became really close. We started writing letters, and we've really been very close since then. So I put on this movie. I'd heard good things about it, but I didn't know really anything about it, just that it was great. I try to watch movies knowing as little as possible about them, and this was true back then too. So I put it on, and yeah, at the time I had been working at this internet company in Massachusetts, and that company, like so many startups around the 2001, were kind of fizzling out. They had started up really hot, and then they died down. It wasn't a place that I was particularly passionate about, but it was just sort of a pragmatic decision I made while I was trying to figure out how to navigate having a music career, like trying to be an adult and trying to pursue this really tricky, unstructured career. Or I didn't even know if I could have a career, but trying to do that. This was just a day job. And anyway, that ended, and I didn't want to look for another job. I just wanted to be a musician. I was temping and doing things here and there, and sometimes I wouldn't work because the temp jobs would actually pay less than if I just collected the unemployment that I was going to get from having worked I'd worked like 8 months at that job, and then I'd worked enough that I was getting some unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, there would be an offer for a temp job, and it was, I knew it was going to be crummy. I knew it was going to be mind numbing. And I'd look and I'd say, oh, if it only pays $9 an hour, I could actually just stay home and work on music and actually have better income.
Yeah.
With just the unemployment check. So it was a strange time. And, I was trying to actually figure out moving to LA. I'd wanted to move to LA. But I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody in the movie industry. I didn't know anybody, out here. And this ties into another podcast that I do called The West Wing Weekly, which I do with a co-host, Josh Molina, who's an actor who was on The West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was somebody who I had written to sort of out of the blue to ask for his advice. He was, on Sports Night, a TV show that I really liked. And
oh, it's my favorite, that TV show. You and I can quote this forever to each other. Sports Night is literally what I turn to when I'm sad. I always go back.
Right?
I have certain episodes that I watch.
Well, that's a show my sister introduced me to.
Oh.
And Jeremy Goodwin, Josh's character, was mm-hmm. my favorite on the show. Turns out that he had gone to Yale, and I had just graduated from Yale. And I found his website, and he had an email address on there. And I wrote to him kind of cold, saying, hey, I'm also a graduate of Yale. And I was, I was wondering if you had any advice for me about, you know, I'm trying to have this career as a film composer. Do I actually have to move to LA, or can I move to New York, which is a lot closer and would be a lot easier? And he wrote back and said, he actually did write back, and he said, I think you're going to have to move to LA because that's where everything happens. Mm. A side story, you know, eventually I did move to LA, but it took me a while. And then 10 years after that, I reconnected with him and we became friends. And now we co-host this podcast together about The West Wing.
It's amazing.
But before any of that happened, back in 2001, I had gotten that advice, but I was just too scared to move to LA. I didn't know anybody, and it was just such a vast distance to travel without having a job, without having an apartment, without having any kind of clear plan. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to move to New York, and I'll try and figure it out.
No, and in your family, had there ever been an artist before? Because, I mean, your parents are immigrants, right?
Yeah, my parents are from India, and no, the idea of me you know, performing music was kind of foreign enough, let alone trying to make a living doing it.
Yeah.
The idea of going to Hollywood and trying to do something in the movie industry just added even more layers of complexity and foreignness to the whole thing.
Wow.
So I had found a lead on an apartment in New York, and I was going to, I knew I was going to move to Brooklyn, in August. So this was August of 2001, and I was going to move there shortly. And I was watching, I had watched this movie, and you know, normally I would have waited for my sister, but because I was homesick that day, I put it on in the afternoon as kind of, you know, something to do while everyone was gone. And I remember my sister came home from work, and it was, you know, towards the end of the movie, and she came in, and you have to walk into the living room, you know, to, where the TV is to really come into the house. And I didn't want her to, and I was loving the movie so much. I was, you know, 90% of the way done with it. And I loved it so much, and I wanted her to experience it too. So I waved her off. I was like, go somewhere else. Do not have any of this spoiled at all. I want you to see it fresh. And so I waved her away, and she was like, okay. And so she went into, our parents' room and, closed the door and whatever. And I finished watching the movie. And then so my strongest memory of this is actually the moment after the movie ended. I went into my parents' room where my sister was watching TV. And I think maybe my mom was there. She was kind of, you know, doing whatever, flitting around the house. My sister was there, had kind of, you know, quarantined herself, waiting for me to finish the movie. And I was just kind of like marinating in the feelings of what I had just seen. And I sat next to her, and I put my arms around her and gave her a hug. And she was like, how was the movie? I was like, it was good. It was really good. And then I think we started talking about it a little bit, but I didn't want to give too much away to her. And then I started crying. And then I started crying like really hard. I think to this day, probably the hardest I've cried as an adult. If you can consider a 21-year-old an adult. But yeah, that, and my mom came in, and she was like, what did you do?
The older sibling gets blamed. What happened?
Yeah, exactly. My sister's like, I don't know. She hadn't seen the movie or anything, so she had no idea where this was coming from. But all of these feelings of, I think, my own sense of guilt and responsibility or lack of responsibility to my family and duties of, you know, being a good child all this stuff kind of, the movie kind of crystallized it for me in a way that I don't think it had been before. They were sort of looser, grayer thoughts. And then this was like shining it all through a prism where I could suddenly see every single band of light and what it all meant and how it all came together. And it really shook me. And I felt so bad about leaving for New York and all this stuff. Anyway, but that was my memory of watching it for the first time.
So when did your sister watch it?
I think I made her watch it that night.
I was going to say, I would not, she can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. I think she watched it that night. And I might have watched it again right then and there with her.
With her. Okay. So you watched it with her.
I think so. Mm. She definitely, I think maybe I had to do other things, but I sort of sat her down and was like, okay, now you have to watch it too.
And what was her reaction?
She loved it. I mean, I think in some ways the emotional punch might have been spoiled a little bit by the fact that, you know, I watched it not knowing anything about it.
Exactly.
She watched it being like, oh, this movie just made my brother sob like a baby.
Yeah.
But she, of course, she loves that movie as well. I think she, so I talked to her about it actually yesterday, asking her about this moment and what she remembered. And she said that she remembered feeling like she understood so much of why I related to it. You know, I told her I felt like this movie was us. I think that's what I said to her. I was like, this is us.
And in this case, you're Terry and she's Sammy, the Terry played by Mark Ruffalo and Sammy played by Laura Linney.
Right. My sister is sort of the more responsible older sister who stayed, you know, who's staying in the place where we grew up and kind of carrying on some of the traditions and values and idioms of our parents. And I was the screw up who was doing, you know, following his whims and going off wherever without much heed to responsibility, either personal responsibility or familial responsibility. So she said that she didn't actually see it quite that way. I mean, she saw a lot of why all the sort of positive stuff about between the sibling relationship. She's like, yeah, I see that. But I think she thought that I was being too hard on myself, comparing myself to Terry. But that's not how I felt about it. I really felt like I identified with Terry, the good and the bad in him, very deeply.
You know, it's so fascinating because Roger Ebert, in his review of You Can Count on Me, said this. I mean, he's just was like a prophet to me in so many ways. And he said this incredible thing where he talked about the movie being, this is not a movie about people solving things. This is a movie about people living day to day with their plans, fears, and desires. And it really struck me because what you're saying, I mean, you saw yourself in Terry, who in so many ways is a fuck up, right? Like that's kind of his role. And yet the movie is also about how time and distance, like, doesn't break this bond that he has with his sister. And even though they're such very different people, it's about the reality of the day to day and what happens in their adult lives. And yet, even with all of that, they still don't break that bond.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that this gave voice to is something darker too. Not it wasn't just sweetness and also not just sort of self-directed guilt. One of my favorite moments is when Terry is packing his bag and he is venting at Rudy, and he says, "I just want to get out of this town, and if you've got any sense, you'll get out of here too." And
Rudy, who was like his 8-year-old nephew. It's just crazy the way he talks to him.
And he says, "Your mom's going to live in this town for the rest of her life. And you know why? Because she thinks she has to. Don't ask me why, but that's the truth. She thinks there's all these things she has to do. But you want to know one thing about your mom? She's a bigger fuck up than I ever was." Because she thinks that. Well, I thought that. Because of this sense of obligation, you know, it's not just like, oh, how noble that the older sister is doing these things. To me, there was some sense of, I was a little angry at my sister.
Trapped by expectations too, right?
Yeah. And I get it being, you know, it's an immigrant family that has certain expectations and older daughters in general, especially older daughters, they don't get to have the same kind of freedom that I would get to as the baby boy of the family. But I was upset that my sister wouldn't just reach out and grab whatever she wanted the way that I did. Partly because I felt like she wasn't getting to live the life that she wanted or could have. And also because it ended up imposing this guilt on me I'm going out and trying to do the thing that I want, and I have to feel bad about it because my sister is sitting here, you know, taking care of the house and taking care of my family just because she thinks that's what she has to do.
So after you both saw this movie and you experienced these things that you're talking about, did you have a conversation with her about that? About, you know, is this actually true for you? Do you feel like you're doing all of these things out of obligation, or is it something she genuinely wanted to do?
Not in the immediate aftermath of the movie. I think it might have been too harsh at the time, or maybe I didn't even completely metabolize it in the aftermath. But definitely in the years after that. So my mom eventually left that house in Massachusetts too, and went to go be with my dad in Nebraska, and then later in Illinois with his work. And so my parents were gone, but we still had this house, and we considered it, you know, this was our house. This was the house I grew up in. We'd moved there when I was 2 years old, and it really felt like the center of our family.
Hmm.
And my sister was living in that house, and she was working close by, sort of like what I had done after college for just a few months, but she was doing it for a few years. And I think my parents felt better about it because then someone was there, someone was looking after it. When they would come back, you know, she could pick them up from the airport. There was, you know, it wasn't just the house that was the hub. She kind of personified that.
Yeah.
And I hated that. I tried so hard to convince her that that was really when I felt like she really needed to let go of a sense of familial obligation and just do what she wanted. You know, the town where we grew up, Peabody, Mass, is not a cosmopolitan place. You know, it's not, it's a suburb. It's not the same as the town where Terry, and it's not as small as where Terry and Sammy are from, but it feels like that. It felt provincial. Mm. My sister had gone to college in Atlanta, and she'd gone to graduate school in Western Mass. And I knew the things that she liked. She loved, you know, she loves books and music and movies, and like has, a, you know, sophisticated tastes. And she was young, you know, she was in her mid-20s. But she was having this kind of suburban life that felt more like that of a mom, you know, twice her age.
Mm.
And so I think this movie helped me communicate to her that this feeling of like, you don't need to do this. You don't need to be like this character. You don't need to be this fuck up of obligation. And you know, she wanted to go somewhere else, maybe go back to school, and eventually she did. So it was a long series of conversations where I told her, I was like, you should just do what you want to do. You know, if you don't want to live in that house, like, we'll deal with it. The rest, you know, it doesn't have to be a responsibility. And so she did. She left and she moved to Providence, Rhode Island, and she started working at Brown, and then eventually started going to school there, and it's where she lives now. And it's a much better place for her. You know, it's the perfect city for her in so many ways, with Brown there and RISD and I don't know, it just the kind of people there. It felt really good when she finally made that transition, but it took you know, 4 years after seeing this movie before that happened.
Wow. Yeah, it's fascinating the kind of hopes and expectations that our families have for us, and then that we have for each other as siblings. I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when Terry first comes back to their hometown and he meets his sister Sammy at the restaurant. And I guess we should say that one of the reasons why they're so close is because they both lost their parents when they were kids. Their parents were killed in a car accident. And so they grew up really only having each other as the family unit. And so as a result, that bond that they already had was made even closer. So it's very clear Terry travels all the time. He's kind of this wanderer and a fuck up, as we've said. And, you know, he meets Sammy after a while at this restaurant, and it's really awkward. And it's awkward because she's so excited, and he's there really just to borrow money and to leave. And it just reminds me, too, of what can happen in sibling relationships, which is what happens when you're no longer living in the same house and time and distance kind of start to pull you apart, and you're just really struggling to hold on to that dynamic that you had and not really losing that. And I just wondered, you know, how you and your sister have dealt with that kind of expectation of each other and how you've allowed each other to grow together.
The scene that breaks my heart early on in the movie is when you see Laura Linney, when Sammy gets a letter from Terry, and she has a filing cabinet, and there's a file that says Terry correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
Because you immediately, you know that he is not saving letters that he's getting back from her.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Basically living out of a backpack. And that really, that just that shot of Terry correspondence, that really crushed me. Mm. I think I have tried really hard to not be that version, to not be the fuck up, to sort of be there for my sister. I don't think that she's never, ever, ever made me feel like I wasn't holding up my end of the bargain or anything like that. But mm-hmm. But here's, when I talked to her, I recorded a little bit of it, and maybe we could play it here.
Yeah.
But she, you can drop it in later. I'll send you the clip. But she said something about how at that time she just always wanted to feel like whatever I was doing or wherever I was going, that there was this like safe place for me, you know, to come back to.
Yeah.
I think I have always felt this tremendous debt to my sister. I think because of that, you know, there's some things that you can't repay when you're the younger sibling. You know, like I said, my sister taught me how to read. There isn't really any kind of way to repay something like that.
Yeah.
It's a relationship that is just born of inequity, and I'm just never gonna, we're never gonna really be on even footing.
No.
My expectations for myself, or, you know, to really, I don't know. There's another scene, you know, when Terry borrows the money and he says, I'll pay you back, man. I love that he calls his sister,
man. I call my brother dude all the time, so I relate to that. Like, come on, dude. Come on.
Yeah. But I remember there was a time when I just felt like my sister was there for me, you know, in ways that my parents couldn't be, not because they didn't want to be or something, but just because there was a cultural gap, you know, in addition to the generational gap that's in every family,
there's also a cultural gap. Yeah.
Yeah. That made it feel like, that existed not just between, our parents and us, but also between us and other, you know, other American kids that I was friends with.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't relate to that cultural gap with their parents. They could, you know, it was just something I felt. Sometimes I felt like my sister was the only person who really understood all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So of course we didn't have anything dramatic or tragic like Sammy and Terry losing their parents, but it did feel sometimes like we were on our own island and we just had each other to kind of, rely on to get what the other person was going through. And then in the context of that, my sister was just there for me so many times. I remember I got into a car accident one time and my sister's the one who came, you know, like it was while she was in graduate school in Western Mass and I was in college and she came out, she drove out and she just basically took care of everything, you know, like the way that you would expect maybe a parent would do or something like that. She did that and she lent me money, things like that. And I remember the day, in 2005 when I did pay her back, you know, I don't know how long it had been. And I paid her back with interest and stuff, but it still just didn't feel like enough, you know, because at the time when she lent me the money, the value of it was so much more than whatever dollar figure I could give her back in return.
Yeah. You needed it.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it felt, somehow it felt different. You know, I didn't want to ask my parents for the money. It was for something, it was for music. It was like just to sort of get by while I was touring sometime. I don't know. She just made things easier for me. And, even still, even watching the movie yesterday just brought all of that stuff flooding back.
Yeah, I totally relate to what you're saying because I think there is something that happens for the older sibling. It's almost like a translation. My parents are Colombian. We were born in Colombia. My brother came when he was 10 and I was 4. And, you know, we were learning English together and he also had to translate for me so much. And he taught me, he taught me how to read in Spanish and he taught me how to ride a bike. And he was in so many ways my parent. But I think there's also that thing that happens with immigrant parents where the sibling that is learning first has to teach the younger sibling and kind of cradles you and really really protects you in ways that you can never pay back. Like you're saying, yeah. You could never pay that back. It reminds me so much of the last scene in the movie, which for me has only become more resonant as I've gotten older and my brother has gotten older. It's the scene where Sammy asks Terry, what's going to happen to you?
Yeah.
And Terry says, nothing too bad. But I got to tell you, Sammy, it's really good to know wherever I am and whatever stupid shit I'm doing that you're back at my home rooting for me. Ugh.
Yeah.
That scene is so heartbreakingly beautiful.
Yeah. My sister used to, you know, like sometimes I'd come to visit her and in her car, she'd be listening to my CD.
Oh.
You know, and it just, I always felt like she was my biggest fan. You know, not in a cheesy way or anything, you know, because my parents, I think they would try and support me and stuff, but even they wouldn't.
They wouldn't get it, right?
Know,
yeah, it's not their
the
world.
Lyrics and things like that. Yeah, she would appreciate it. I felt like she was back home rooting for me. And that scene crushes me. Plus also, this is one of the things I love about this movie is the title and this scene and how, you know, they get there without ever saying,
they never say it. They allude to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember what we used to say to each other?
Exactly. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. Yeah. It reminds me of, this other film critic, David Edelstein, said in his review in Slate that when people open their mouths, the characters in these movies, what comes out is never a definite expression of character. It's an awkward compromise between how they feel and what they're able to say, or how they feel and what they think they should say, or how they feel and what will best conceal how they actually feel. There's always so much that's not being said that is right there, and it doesn't even get expressed in words, but you feel it.
Yeah. There's another part to this movie that I also really related to, which was the beautiful scene between Kenneth Lonergan and
who plays the priest in the movie?
Who plays the priest? Yeah, and Terry, this sort of intervention that Sammy stages.
Yeah.
One of the things I used to fight with my parents about often was religion and sort of the role of it in our family.
Oh, I feel you. I grew up evangelical Christian. I feel you.
Yeah. my family was Hindu and they still are practicing Hindus and I felt like some of the things that he was saying word for word, you know, I was like, she's like, why don't you believe in? He's like, well, because I think like, I don't need fairy tales.
And yeah.
All this stuff. In order to know how to be a good person. And,
yeah.
And it used to just, we used to just fight about it so much. And I think there was a part of me that wanted, that kind of like was aggressively atheistic, as like a form of defiance and trying to push back. I felt like I needed to be, assertive in a way. Where I think I have ended up in my life is actually what and you know, this was sort of more in high school. And so when I watched this movie, this was 4 or 5 years later after those fights where, you know, my parents learned not to fight with me anymore, try and get me to go to temple with them.
It's useless.
Yeah, exactly. Unless they want to get into 40 minutes of, Kierkegaard and like with me and just end up with them rolling their eyes and yelling. So this was after that. And I felt like I had settled into this place that was so much more like what Ron says, where he asks, if there's, you know, is it possible to consider that your life is important? And is there any way for you to believe it without calling it God or religion or whatever term it is you object to?
Yeah. Oh, that's
I love
beautiful.
That somehow that's woven into this story about siblings as well. Like that's this whole other, like, it's just such a beautiful little moment, but so profound.
It really is. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to say about You Can Count on Me?
I love the use. I love the use of the Bach prelude.
Oh yeah, yeah. The music is used in such an interesting way in this movie.
Yeah, I think that. You know, that Bach piece is just like everywhere, of course.
And, yeah.
And I think it's amazing that it's woven into this story and doesn't somehow feel like a cliche.
Yeah. What do you think the, because when watching the movie again to prepare for this, I kept wondering why this piece? What do you think, you yourself as a musician, why do you think that was used?
So my theory is that is one of the pieces that was played at their parents' funeral.
Oh, duh. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's a way to sort of connect back to that moment, even, you know, it's like a non-visual flashback.
Mm. And that's why we keep hearing it.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's like the parents' ghost over the whole, you know, there's so much of the loss of their parents has colored so much of their life. You know, who knows what their lives would have been like if their parents had been around the whole time from while they were growing up. So I always thought that Bach piece, you know, like I said, you hear it's so ubiquitous. It's exactly the kind of thing that you can imagine being played at the parents' funeral. It, you know, in the actual funeral scene and in that opening, it's a different aria that's sung. But I still think that's what it connects to.
I'm just hearing Tony, our producer you've been working with, was just asking me a question. Yeah, something that I wonder about is how this movie actually helped you, and maybe as you've gotten older and watched it again and again, how it's helped you to reconcile your own sense of responsibility with your family. And I know that was something you talked about. It made you feel guilty, this idea of you going off and pursuing this career as an artist, as a musician. And I wonder how it's helped you reconcile that.
And I think Terry has been a kind of his character has been kind of a warning for me, a cautionary tale. And I just remembered the other piece that's in the piece that's played during the funeral is another Bach piece. It's the Matthew Passion.
Got it.
And so Bach is connected to the parents. That's
got it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No.
He is sort of a cautionary tale. At least that's how I viewed it. And I was like, this character feels so much like me, and maybe a version of me, like a there but for the grace of God go I kind of version of me.
Yeah.
And I think it's, for better or for worse, I end up trying very hard to justify the choices that I've made to my family. I think, you know, we're now past the point where they're worried about me. They don't question the decisions that I've made or anything like that. You know, for a long time, my parents, you know, my parents are very big on continuing education. So a lot of times, you know, they'd get it. My dad would suggest, you know, this is great, you know, that you're doing music and stuff. Maybe, you know, it's almost like a small business that you're running. Maybe you should try going, you know, for your MBA while you're doing this. And I could help you with your music career. And I was like, yeah, thanks, Dad. I don't think that's probably the right move. And I don't
exactly.
think
that I can, you're like, you know, I can't even explain this to you. Years. It's okay. Your best of intentions here.
Yeah. But that was an evolution from the conversation before that where, oh, you know so much about music and it's so much about your life. Maybe, you know, your grandfather was a lawyer, your uncle is a lawyer. Maybe you would be a lawyer who is involved with music.
Yeah.
No, that's also not what I want to do. So anyway, we're past those conversations, but I think I feel an extreme pressure to show them, you know, almost on like a weekly basis. I tend to check in with my parents to give them a progress report. One because they want to hear from me, but also I think I tend to try and show, hey, this is happening and this is happening and this is happening. So look, you still don't have to worry about me. You know, I'm still like, these are interesting things that are happening to my life, or that are happening in my life because of the choices that I made, not despite them.
Yeah. And your sister has your back and supports you in that too, I'm sure.
Yeah. She's still is, I think, my number one fan. And it means so much to me.
It's funny, in my relationship with my brother, we've both been Terry at very different points in our life.
Really?
And kind of are continuously the fuck-ups to our parents. So it's an equilibrium. It kind of helps that we're both like, yeah, so how did you disappoint our parents today? We share that burden together.
It's funny, my sister said, you know, she sometimes tells this story where, you know, when my mom was, I think my mom was pregnant. And she said she wanted my mom to have a big brother for her. Like, she's like, okay, great. I'm going to get a big, she's like, can I get a big brother? Can my new sibling be a big brother? She wanted a big brother.
Aww.
And then, you know, years later, she said to me, she's like, you know, sometimes it feels like I did. There have been times when I've, you know, managed to take care of things for her or help her with things, that she feels like, okay, I'm the older sister, but you're the big brother here.
And that's the thing about the sibling dynamic when it's in when we're our best selves, to quote Oprah, you know, it's that we can be that for each other, right? We can be Sammy and Terry and play those roles for each other.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking about this and picking this movie. I hadn't seen it in so many years, and it was just, yeah, it was amazing to watch. And I immediately called my brother, and I was like, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I watched it and called my sister right away.
Yeah. You can't help it. You can't help it, because you're so right. You can never really express in words what an older sibling, particularly in an immigrant family, has done for you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your work, which is just amazing to listen to.
Thanks a lot. Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me to do this.
No, I'm so excited to have it out. Well, Tony will be back in touch, and just so you know, he is a big fan as well. So he's
awesome.
Been singing your praises all week. It's been great to hear.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is something that, you know, since we talked about me moving to LA and scoring stuff or whatever, but the most recent thing that I scored is a TV show on Netflix called Everything Sucks.
Oh, cool.
And so I don't know if there's a place, you know, for a note or a whatever mention of that, but that's,
for sure. Yeah. No, thank you for expressing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Also, I just want you to know that, my favorite Sports Night episode is, now I'm trying to remember the title of the name, because of course,
yeah,
Aaron,
yeah,
Sorkin, title of the episode, but it's the one where Dan is actually the character I most relate to. And Dan apologizes to his brother.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I watched that episode. I mean, I've seen it probably like 100-something times. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Who should I apologize to?
Yeah.
Whoever.
Exactly.
Oh, so good. Oh,
that episode. And then the Kafelnikov, that's my second favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever I feel like I'm having a meltdown, I watch that episode.
Do you play
Evgeny Kafelnikov?
Do you ever play celebrity?
No, I don't.
You know that there's that episode where they're,
oh yeah,
like when I pat my stomach, that means
yeah.
Yeah, that is something that I used to play a lot on tour with my band. Like, we'd go and crash at some
awesome,
like, punk rock house. You know, there'd be four of us showing up, and there'd be five or six punk kids living at the house that we didn't know, but who'd say, you know, any bands can crash here, whatever. And so we'd get there, and I'd be like, okay, we're all going to play celebrity. And then we would have a bond.
Oh, so I love it.
Those, you know,
shoe money tonight.
Hours. Exactly.
No, that show is such a comfort for me. Ugh.
Oh, hey, you know, maybe you should listen to the most recent episode of the West Wing Weekly, because in it, Tommy Shalhoub tells the story. His company is called Chew Money Tonight, and tells the origin story of where that phrase came
no
from.
No way. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I'm a couple episodes behind. So this is really good to prompt me to binge. Okay.
Oh, okay. Good.
Thank you so much, really. Awesome. I so appreciate it.
Awesome. Do you know when this might go up?
I do not, but Tony will definitely be in touch with you.
Okay.
To let you know.
Okay, great. And
cool.
I'll promote it.
Thanks
anywhere.
Again. I so appreciate it. And yeah, give your sister a hug from me. Thank her.
Well,
all younger siblings sticking together.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye. Have a good rest
bye.
Of the day.
You too.
Bye.